STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
Hi there, folks. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kokel, and I was just giving him a heads up to open to Jeremiah 23 because that's where the first question starts.
Alrighty.
But this is the STRS podcast, hashtag STRAsk. Use that on Twitter to write your questions so we can find it. I pose it to Greg, and we put him on a timer, and he's got 4 minutes or less to answer it.
Is that in the Old Testament?
Because let's just face it, not everybody has the concentration, time, energy to listen to a whole hour podcast. There's a lot of value in that, and a lot of people enjoy it, but a lot of people like to get little bite size.
I think it's mesmerizing. I don't understand that.
I think it's mesmerizing, too.
All right. Here we are, Jeremiah 23, and it is in the Old Testament. Jeremiah, prophet of the...
You're asking me or you're trying to remember?
You know the answer to this. You took the Bible fast forward of the deportation along with Ezekiel.
And nobody Daniel. Ever listened to him, and that's why we call a Jeremiah.
Yeah, the weeping prophet.
The weeping prophet.
Yeah.
Nobody ever paid attention to him, but he still did what God told him to do.
He had allergies.
Okay, first question comes from M. Watt.
Well, I did get a little grin out of Brooke.
Oh, Brooke's okay. Easy. She's just being nice to you because you're her boss.
So, all
right. Okay, if Jeremiah, this comes from M. Watt. If Jeremiah 23, 25 through 26 warns against delusional dreams, but Joseph dreamed of coming signs in Genesis 37, what should we make of our own dreams? So why don't you read Jeremiah 25 and 26 for us.
Just the two verses there? I have heard what the prophets have said, who falsely prophesy my name, saying, I had a dream, I had a dream. Maybe that's where that line came from Martin Luther King. Anyway, how long is there anything in the hearts of the prophets who prophesy falsehood, even these prophets of the deception of their own heart, who intend to make my people forget my name by their dreams, which they relate to one another, just as their fathers forgot my name because of Baal? Okay, so Jeremiah's bugged. And he's bugged for a very particular reason. What's happening right now is the Northern Kingdom, a couple, 250, 300 years ago, Israel has already been dispersed by the Assyrians. That's gone. You've got the Southern Kingdom, Judah and Benjamin, that remain in the land, and they are ready to be judged. And so God is bringing Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar against the Southern Kingdom to lay siege to it and eventually cart off in captivity many of those who live there in Judah and particularly in Jerusalem. And there are a whole bunch of prophets that are running around telling the people that they're going to be okay. No worries. Fight Nebuchadnezzar. Now, Jeremiah, God's prophet, is saying cooperate with Nebuchadnezzar. Go along with him. In our famous verse, Jeremiah 29:11 and following, and before that, the whole chapter deals with this particular issue. This is why it makes it particularly frustrating when people take that passage out of its context and make it mean something it doesn't actually mean. Jeremiah is upbraiding the false prophets who have dreams they claim are from God that are meant to give comfort to the people, instead of the direction that Jeremiah is giving them in his own prophetic ministry. And so here he's after them, and there's a lot where he has to say in the next few chapters up through 29. In fact, when the Jeremiah 29:11, I have the plans for you for welfare and not calamity. Well, that's for some, but the rest of them, it's calamity and not welfare, and that's right below that passage, because they listen to these false prophets. Now, I don't know what we can take away from this in terms of application to our own dreams. God revealing things to dreams is a biblical modality of revelation, okay? So we see this not only in the Old Testament with prophets, but we also see this in the New Testament. So Joseph receives a dream, actually twice, regarding the disposition of Mary. First, to let Mary know, let Joseph know that Mary is with child by the Spirit, and that's how when the name Jesus is provided for that child. And then after Jesus is born, there's another dream in which he is told to take Jesus and flee to Egypt. Okay, so there's a biblical modality, and later on in the book of Acts we see dreams also factoring in, and sometimes they're called visions. First it's described as a dream and then a vision, but these are a way that God communicates. It doesn't mean, though, that every single dream that we have is a communication from God. And I've never had a dream that I thought was a God communicating to me, though I still think if someone were to make that claim, that itself is a more biblical modality than the so-called still small voice that people feel the nudging from God, because that isn't what that meant at all in 1 Kings 19. So I don't encourage people to take stock of their dreams. However, it certainly is could be the case that God could use a dream to communicate some revelation to an individual. My sense is that kind of dream is just going to have a different quality to it. That's all I could say. I can't speak from experience, obviously. But in this particular case, these guys, I don't think they were having dreams. I think these are just plain old false prophets who are saying they have a word from God and are saying they have a dream, just to commend themselves to the people, okay? Just like the prophets of Pharaoh would interpret his dreams insofar as he would tell them what they were and come up with their own things, not because they were inspired to do this, but they're just trying to keep their jobs. And this is why Pharaoh said at one point, you got to tell me the dream and the interpretation. Well, give us the dream. Nope, you got to tell me that too. So this is a real test that Joseph ended up passing. That's what I think is going on here in Jeremiah 24 and 25, 26 and 27 and 28 and 29. It's all in there, the same kind of thing.
Okay. Open up to Matthew 12:40, and before I give you the question, why don't you read
the
passage?
Is that in the New Testament? Yeah. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John.
Matthew 12.
Oh, okay, Matthew 12. Got it. Okay.
40.
12:40, all right. Jonah.
Go ahead and read it.
Let me start in verse 38. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees said to him, this would be Jesus, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." But he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation craves for a sign, and yet no sign will be given to you but the sign of Jonah the prophet." Now verse 40. "For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the sea monster, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth."
So Del Medico A from Twitter asks, how are we to understand Matthew 12:40 if Jesus wasn't interred? And does it speak to Jesus actually having descended to hell? I guess the belly of the fish.
Well, the descent in the hell is a piece of the Apostles' Creed that actually has a very sketchy history. Mm-hmm. That particular detail doesn't show up until the 4th or 5th century in the Apostles' Creed. So I have no, and even then it seems to be just kind of a parallelism where it's just repeating what came before. He died, was buried, and descended into Hades. Okay, the idea there is just, it's reinforcing the idea that he's dead and he's in the ground, not that he goes to the place of hell that's fire and people are there and he's doing something else there. There's certainly nothing about that here in Matthew. Now, is the question that 3 days and three nights, and it's not 3 days and three nights if you go from Friday afternoon to Sunday morning, is that part of the concern?
I guess so.
The calculation? Well, part of these alleged contradictions are resolved when you understand the way that people talk about things during that time. To say it was a day and a night, nowadays, we usually mean something very precise. We mean, well, daytime and nighttime. However, to say a day and a night or 3 days and three nights was just a way of referring, in the parlance of that time, to 3 calendar days. And so even though he was buried on the evening of Friday, Jesus was, and he rose from the dead Sunday morning, that would be one night, two nights, and one morning, two mornings. That was two nights and two mornings, or 2 days maybe, you know, by our reckoning, but not by theirs. He was just using the standard way of referring to the calendar, okay? And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, any part of Friday was considered a day and a night in their parlance, and any part of Sunday would be considered a day and a night. So being killed towards the late afternoon, early evening of Friday, before sunset, and rising in the early morning of Sunday would certainly have satisfied the requirements of this particular passage. But it's something that's easy to miss because we don't talk that way nowadays.
Right. And I was just thinking, it just, you know, people who think the Gospels were just made up and fabricated, I mean, why would Matthew write that and then not try to be more consistent right. later on?
Yeah.
You know, he would have adjusted these things unless, of course, they just think he was a total idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. There are lots of things that raise eyebrows here that you'd think if somebody was fabricating, they wouldn't say stuff like that unless it actually took place that way. That's a good point.
Next question comes from Timothy_Turner. If the Son took upon human nature and body, does that mean that he has an attribute that the Father does not have?
Yeah, he does. But keep in mind that the attribute he has is not a divine attribute. He is the single one, the individual member of the Trinity that added to himself a human nature. The Father didn't add to himself a human nature. The Spirit didn't either. And so, yes, Jesus has an attribute the Father doesn't have. That attribute is humanity. That's classical Christianity. That in no way undermines our understanding of the Trinity or anything like that, because what we hold with regards to the deity of Christ is that everything that is true of the nature of God is true of the second person. We also hold that everything is true of the nature of humanity is also true of the second person. This is where we get a fully God and fully man equation.
Two natures, one person.
That's exactly right. But the person is the divine person, the Word, who became flesh and dwelt among us. So even though it could be stated that way, like, so Jesus has an attribute that God doesn't have, it sounds a little bit fishy, but it's entirely true. Jesus also had the attribute of taking a nap. God doesn't
getting
sleep.
Getting tired and hungry.
Yeah, and everything else. All those things that are characteristic of being wed in a certain sense with the human body was true of Jesus and is not true of the Father.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Greg, for all that insight. We appreciate it. Okay. That's it for this episode, folks. Send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag SJRAsk. And I'll pose them to Greg, or perhaps for a guest host that comes along once in a while Greg's away fishing.
Yeah,
Can't wait. Yep. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by making a gift online at str.org.